Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
All of those things just hit different today than they do on a normal day. That sequence of things that you heard, that the preamble that you hear coming into the show every day. Oh, give me some juice, baby. Let's do it. All of those things hit. Even Ben Gary in our ear right before the open hit saying, here we go. Here we go is all caps, size 72 font today, because Brandon Scott, Texans training camp is here. Texans training camp with a dash of Bryce Matthews sprinkled on top of it today.
Dude, it's the moment that I've been waiting for. Now, if Bryce Matthews aside, we'll get to him in a little bit, but Bryce Matthews, but I mean, Texans training camp out here on the grass before the Texans hit the field. And I don't want to hear anybody say that, hey, the season doesn't start until the first game, training camp doesn't start. No, football season, Texans season officially started right now under the sound of our voice with us right here at the Methodist Training Center.
100%, 100%, and we are right on top of it. We are stationed. This is probably good to know once the fans are able to start coming out here next week to watch. Our spot where we are is we're kind of at the corner of the end zone, right next to the gate where the players come walking in. Players and coaches are going to be walking right by us, probably starting at about right about the time we're going off the air today. Yep. At about 8 a.m. is when people start to matriculate in here. And, dude, there's no X's and O's. There's nothing technical I want to get to anytime right out of the chute. I want to talk football. I'm just excited that this Texan season is here. I feel strongly this is the most talented roster top to bottom they've put together. This is the roster they've certainly put together that's the most built to last for a long, long time as well. And I'm just amped for the season, man. The Rams game in week one cannot get here soon enough. I want to get excited for this. I want a dueling piano with you. All the things I'm pumped up about for this Texan season coming
up. Man, I'm right there with you, man. Right. Even the little things, man. Just looking at the bridge.
The bridge.
Oh, right there on Kirby.
All right, Ben, hit the music.
Let's go.
Let's hit the music. I'm going to let you start. That bridge right there.
Dude.
Watching the players come over top of the bridge for practice at about 8:30, 8:40 this morning is when they'll start to come over here.
And not just this morning, but for the next not 17 weeks, but however, this
6 weeks,
six weeks of the training camp, the 17 weeks of the season, that bridge right there, diagonal to my right, coming across Kirby, that's where the players come. The Houston Texans social media team likes to prompt the guys with fun questions, put them on their social media page. I'm even ready for the simple things just like that. The bridge right there on freaking Kirby.
This is the most excited I've been about a bridge since I went to the Niners-Texans game in San Francisco back in 2013. Bridge over Kirby. I start envisioning things happening during the season. And the thing that pops into my head, and I need 17 games of this year.
Let's go.
Not just 10 games or 12 games of this. Nico Collins just mossing people.
Yes.
Mossing people, trucking people, running people over, throwing them down by their face, tie-facing them in the end zone like he did to Jalen Johnson or whichever Tyreek Stevenson, whichever Chicago DB that was last year that got into his face, and then two plays later, that guy's getting chokeslammed like the Undertaker into the end zone. But I need that. I need 17 weeks of that this year.
And Nico Collins reminding Tyreek Stevenson that, hey, this is weight room right here. There's pain up in here if you come up in here incorrect. Since you're on Nico Collins, let's stay there. Sean, how about the dadgum scramble drill?
Oh,
I can't wait to see the Nico scramble drill. You remember in the beginning of the season, the first few weeks of the season, that essentially was their offense. Now, I'm not looking forward to the idea of that solely being their offense.
Yeah.
I want them to have more answers than just that. But you better believe that the scramble drill is going to be heavily featured by the Houston Texans between C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins. Brother, I cannot wait for it.
I can't either. I hope you're right, though. I hope it does have a break glass in case of emergency status this year, as opposed to
this is
our third best play that we run. But yes, I'm here for it. Speaking of that, the guy on the other end of those plays, C.J. Stroud.
Okay,
I don't want this to happen as much this year. But there's something about C.J. Stroud under duress, hands in his face, hands on his arms, and still somehow finding a way to zip that laser out there, man.
Dude,
C.J. under pressure throwing dimes I'm here for that this morning, man, and the next 7 months.
Dude, how about on the other side of the ball? Derek Stingley Jr. picking off dudes like it's nobody's, like it's like there's no tomorrow.
Stingley's ball skills.
Derek Stingley on defense looking like he's playing offense. That's one of the things I'm excited for.
Okay, that's a great one. That's a great one. I'm going to stick on I'm going back over to the
Let's
offense.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We can ping pong. We got offense.
We can do this all day long.
Come on.
Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb in the same backfield.
Ooh.
Running over people, running around people. If Nick Chubb, what percent of peak Nick Chubb gets us excited this season? I don't expect him to be 5 yards a carry, 1,600-yard Nick Chubb. He'd have made more than $2 million. But what percent of Nick Chubb gets you fired up for this season?
Let's put it at a passing grade, 70%. When I was in school, 70. At some people's school, it was 60. Yeah. I'm not going to settle for 60.
Yeah.
70% of Nick Chubb, and I'm praying.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we get 70% of Nick Chubb. That 100% is going to be it for me. If he's 70%,
dude,
I think you've got at the very least a number two running back.
Think about that. A year ago, in 2023, they're trotting out Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce, and now we're trotting out. We're going to watch the backs of the jerseys sitting here, you and I, of number 28 Mixon and number 21 Chubb running onto this practice field together.
I mean, obviously.
That's exciting.
Obviously, the level of play of those guys is its own thing, but they even just look different.
Yes.
Right? The backfield even just looks different.
See, yeah.
You went offense. I'm going to go back on the defense real quick on this one. How about Will Anderson Jr.? Looking like a rabid dog chasing after dudes.
Yeah.
Like Will Anderson Jr.'s motor, it's something to almost envy. Because it's like, I mean, how does this guy never turn it off? Will Anderson Jr., running after guys like a rabid dog, never quitting on the play. It's really what makes him special. I can't wait to see
it. He's, you know, wherever he is right now, it's 6 in the morning. I'm guessing he's in the building. He's on right now.
Oh, he's salivating.
He's on right now.
He can't even touch the quarterback.
No.
You think he knows it? He'll know it once he gets out here, but he's going out here with the mentality, man, I'm going out here and chasing dudes down.
He's scary, right? He's scary, Will Anderson.
Yes.
Guess what? He's only the second scariest guy on that defensive line. He's only the second scariest defensive end on this team.
How about that?
Because you got Danielle Hunter, who looks like he was built in a lab.
Yeah, he's
coming
a
out here.
He's a cyborg
to get another 13 sacks or whatever it is this year. This defense. Segment aside, gimmick aside, music underneath us aside. It could be 8:30 at night sitting in my chair at home, and I just think about this defense, and I get amped up. Think of the dogs, man. The two guys we just named, Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, Azeez Alshire, dog, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, dog, Kamari Lassiter. I can't wait for the first thing that gets Kamari Lassiter to slap himself in the head 20 times. And I don't mean in week one. I'm talking about hour one of practice.
Oh, yeah.
That's how these practices operate out here. They operate like it's week one of the regular season. Dude, Stingley, Petrie, Kalen Bullock.
Dude, you've already named a couple of other dogs that I want to get to. Azeez Alshire.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Texans fans, let us know. Who other than me is out here excited about Azeez Alshire towing that line? Towing the line?
Me. I'm raising
my
hand.
Maybe crossing it a little bit, but not quite enough. I'm not excited about the idea of him crossing it enough to be suspended. So Azeez Alshire being a habitual line stepper and towing that line, but not quite enough to get him suspended and miss games.
You know what? Offense, defense, special teams. I am excited to watch Frank Ross hyped up like he just won Fast Money on Family Feud.
Whew.
You ever watch Fast Money on Family Feud, B. Scott?
Of course.
The bonus money thing at the end, and when families win, they're all just
every Frank
knee, fist pumping. That's Frank Ross after every hit out here at practice. I can't wait. If we all have Frank Ross's energy during this training camp and regular season, this season's going into February.
Dude,
man.
Let's go.
If we all just channel Frank Ross, it's going to February this
How
year,
about
man.
The confidence of one? I'm going to give you an underrated one.
Yeah.
A death piece. How about the confidence of one Tim Settle? This is an inside media thing for me, but one of the things I can't wait for is looking at Tim Settle at his locker talking mad smack like he's Aaron Donald or somebody. And that's not a dig. I appreciate the irrational confidence. I every now and then have a little bit of irrational confidence to me. Tim Settle out here not only making plays, but once we get to the locker room, standing next to his locker, like, what you gonna do?
Yeah.
I'm Tim Settle.
It's right. Well, and I hope that whole room of interior defensive linemen channel that attitude.
Yeah.
Because they were disrespected by ESPN this week.
They were.
ESPN called them the weak link on this team. And I don't think they're the weak link at all.
No.
Not a bunch of Pro Bowlers there, but those are a bunch of guys that are the perfect complement to the Pro Bowlers that you do have in that front seven. I am excited for those guys as well. Dude, this list is so long of stuff I'm pumped up about this year.
Oh, man, it's way more to get to than just a 12-minute segment.
Cody Stutes' top 11 Texans, and I'm like, I could add like seven more to this right now.
Shout out to Cody Stutes. I'm looking forward to his list and his newsletter and Texans football
and all of
the content that we're going to be creating here at Sports Radio 610, all of our peers in the media.
Yeah, man.
Dude, I can't wait to consume it all.
It's going
to
be great. It's going to be great. All right, so we're fired up. As you can tell, we're fired up for the season.
Let's go, man.
Fired up for camp. We got updates that we need to get to a little later on this hour as to the injury sheet, knock on wood, looks really good right now for the Texans.
Yeah,
there's going to be some guys that are working in a little slowly out here, understandably so. You know, Mixon was in a walking boot during the spring. I'm guessing he's not getting the full workload right out of the chute, but the reports are all good on whatever it was that was ailing him. You know, a few other guys here and there. Danico Autry is going to get worked in a little bit slowly. But by and large, Jalen Nowell back. He missed minicamp because of a hamstring. So we'll get a look at the rookie today. Get a look at both rookie wide receivers today. We didn't even mention any of the rookies on the team. I'm super fired up for Jaden Higgins to be looking across the way and channeling himself into Nico 2.0. I'm excited about that. I just can't wait, man. It's here.
Man.
We're sitting out here looking at the practice field.
Woody Marks as a running back that adds a different element and a different dynamic to the offense.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I don't think they have another running back that's quite like him. I know we're talking about a rookie, but I can't wait to see him out there playing. This is what we're here for. And I should point out that training camp, since you talked about health, it's football, but it's also about getting some of these guys that are dealing with stuff, getting them right and getting them healthy.
Yeah.
So even that part is something to be excited about. Even if they're not out here playing just yet, the fact that they're out here getting themselves ready for week one. Let's go.
Fans will be out here starting next week. Until then, we are your eyes and ears out here at Texans training camp here on Sports Radio 610. We've got you covered wall to wall. Texans radio will be up at 8 o'clock today, John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. And then after that, In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atatula. They will be out here from 10 to 2 every day. They'll be getting guys off the practice field, interview style. We're going to hear from Nick Caserio at 8:30 a.m. today. We're going to hear from D'Amico Ryans after practice. Have not found out who the players are. I will effort that and find out which players we're going to hear from today. I'm guessing it's the headliners, but we'll find out. I'll check with Texans Media Relations. But it's here, man. Football, I'm with you, B. Scott. There are a lot of people who say football season is here. They go, no, it starts in week one. If it starts for week one in you, that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to fan.
Yeah,
but I'm telling you right now, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people that circle. They're texting me right now, and they're texting the show that circle July 23rd as the day where this whole thing gets kicked off.
Yeah, don't rain on our parade, baby. Yeah. We're here ready for football season.
We got umbrellas.
Right now.
We're fine. We're good.
Let's do it.
All right. We're off and running, as you can tell, on a Wednesday. Texans training camp is here. Let's make sure we get to the Astros in the next segment, because there is something happening with the Astros right now, and his name is Bryce Matthews. We'll get to that. Also, four camps that I am interested in outside of Houston. The four NFL training, because training camp's getting started everywhere today. The four that I'm most intrigued by, when I get back home and I'm done with the Texans for the day and I open up my iPad, these are the four I'll be looking at. We'll get to that as well. We got headlines later in the hour. It is going to be a rapid-fire show today, man. 6 to 8 a.m. here on Payne and Pendergast. B. Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth back tomorrow. Stay there. You're listening to Sports Radio 610.
Bryce Matthews gets into one deep to left field, and the Astros have the lead. Bryce Matthews continues here in Arizona. Third home run in two games, and just like that, the Astros have awakened to a 2-1 lead.
The Bryce is right.
A lot less mystery on that home run than there was on Bryce Matthews' first career home run that he hit on Monday, the three-run home run to take the lead they didn't relinquish on Monday. Same thing last night. Well, same thing in general last night. It happened much later in the game this time around. Bryce Matthews, the local kid out of Atascocita, with his third home run in two games of the nine runs that the Astros have scored against the Arizona Diamondbacks in these first two games of this series, Bryce Matthews has driven in seven of those runs. A five RBI night on Monday, and then last night, that two-run home run with the Astros trailing 1-0 late in the game. This was in the eighth inning he hit that. Framber Valdez walked off the mound last night, trailing 1-0, pitched another gem. Framber's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, if not the best pitcher in baseball, over the course of the last couple of months. They haven't lost a Framber Valdez pitched game in 13 outings, but Bryce Matthews made sure that that was the case. Top of the eighth, hits that two-run home run. They go on to win 3-1. Danced with the devil, B. Scott, in the bottom of the ninth. No Josh Hader last night because he pitched the night before, so they brought in Brian King to get the save. And six pitches in, he had loaded the bases.
Yeah, and they were talking about once he gets up there how it's his first. It would be his first career save in major leagues.
Yeah,
and it looked
got
like
his money's worth.
It definitely looked like it's like, oh, if you were to tell me, if you weren't to tell me ahead of time that this guy's never done this before, never been in this position before in the big leagues, oh, it would be apparent once they get up there. But you mentioned Framber and how the Astros have won 13 consecutive starts from Framber.
Yeah.
Framber's a known commodity. We know what he is. He's a top-line pitcher, front-of-line pitcher. We understand that. All-star last year and previous years.
He's going to be very wealthy.
Going to be very wealthy very soon. And I parts of me wish it was the Astros that was paying, but I've already grown to accept that. Moving on, though, on this Bryce Matthews thing, we understand Framber's role and his importance to the team. We're starting to understand now, we're getting to see what Bryce Matthews could mean to the Astros. And even before we get that far, just the fact that he won you two games against Arizona.
He won you two games. And we got to point out, it wasn't just the offense last night.
Oh, the end of the game. The double play.
The double play to close out the game. Man, if that – boy, Brian King got lucky, man. I mean, if that ball is hit in about 90% of the other places in the infield, that is a tie ball game, and you're going into extras. If going into extras, maybe lose the game because Brian King was scuffling. Bryce Matthews makes – he's like he was breakdancing out there, just comes up with the ball, double play. He did it with his glove and his bat last
night. Dude, you don't even – like, you don't even need a great imagination to play out the exact scenario that you just played out, because I feel like earlier in that inning to load the bases, one of the plays was Bryce Matthews – batting down a ball from getting to the outfield, but wasn't able to quite make the play.
Yep.
And so that's what it looks like, right? What if it's just, you know, a game of inches when you talk about that? What if he just isn't able to get there, isn't able to make that play? But on top of that, you got the defense, you got the offense. And then again, the importance of – I've been talking about this all week, how I don't want to underplay one of 162. When you're in a race like this, when you're dealing with the adversity that the Astros have been dealing with for the entire year – every game matters. All of the pieces matter. And I'll point out again, Bryce Matthews just got you two. Just got you two on the way to the race.
Yeah, I mean, it's still obviously very, very early in his career. But the fact that he's starting to look more comfortable. I mean, he's got four hits and three of them are home runs. The fact that he's starting to look more comfortable, I don't know that he would even be up with the big league club if they hadn't had all these injuries. In fact, I'm fairly certain he wouldn't be. If it turns out that he's – and I'm getting way ahead of myself – but if it turns out that he's even an average hitter and what he's doing on defense, you know, he may be a high strikeout, high home run guy. If that's who he is, that's who he is. But if it turns out that all these injuries are the reason you stumbled into what was the one position that was sort of a revolving door for you coming into the year, that you might have stumbled into this solution at second base and he happens to be a guy who's under your control for the next 6 years – That would be a nice silver lining to come out of what has been a snake bit injury team. And we should add Lance McCullers back to the IL with a blister on his hand.
It's like a tradition. It's like a tradition. But with Bryce Matthews, man, it's interesting that you point out that, yeah, you know, who knows if he would even be here if not for all of these injuries.
Yeah.
But also, it is the one position that's been a revolving door, one of the few positions of need, positions of issue, if you will, for the Astros. Bryce Matthews could have very well been a solution whether they were injured or not. Because otherwise you're talking about, hey, is it Brendan Rodgers?
Yeah.
Is it one of these other guys that's kind of a minor leaguer? Or is it the ascending, you know, first-round pick, the chosen one, if you will, Bryce Matthews? So, and again, man, without even getting ahead of ourselves, even just if we isolate it to right now, this year, the run that they're on, we'll be able to look back. Whatever the Astros do in the postseason, we'll be able to look back and say, hey, you remember back in – mid to late July when Bryce Matthews helped you get two games that allowed you to either win the division or, hey, we were just talking about this in the break, get the number one seed. Like there's a couple of different races going on simultaneously here for the Astros, and Bryce Matthews just helped the Astros in a great way.
Astros are tied in the loss column now for the tops in the AL with Toronto and the Tigers. The only thing keeping the Tigers out in front, they played one more game and they won it. They're 60-42. The Blue Jays and the Astros, both 59-42. The Astros, five games up in the AL West. So we'll circle back to them in headlines, but another good night for the Astros out in the desert. Day game today out there, I believe 2:40, something like that, first pitch for the Astros. All right, we're at Texans training camp. We had our hype segment in the beginning. We'll do another one in the 7 o'clock hour. All the things that B. Scott and I are just hyped about for camp and the season coming up. There are other things going around the NFL that I want to get to, and some of them impact the Texans because it's in the division. There are other training camps that I'm keeping eyes on throughout this. Texans obviously get the lion's share of my attention and most of our attention, 90% of it. But the other 10%, B. Scott, as I kind of do my afternoon thing where I'm kind of flipping through the other camps, seeing what's going on, the four camps that are most intriguing to me outside of here, number one, and this does impact the Texans because they play them twice a year, every year, and in week three of this season, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ooh. And solely because of the Travis Hunter, I'm going to call it an experiment right now because I know they're hell-bent. Well, we know from the Magnificent Gladstone. Ben, I'm going to skip the audio on this just because we're crunched for time and the Magnificent Gladstone rambles for a minute and a half in this particular cut. But everybody knows the cut I'm talking about.
Long-winded-ass
Travis Hunter's going to change the game of football, and he's going to change everybody's lives. Like Travis Hunter is some sort of combination of Charles Woodson and Tony Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
The self-help guy. Like, Travis Hunter is going to change everybody's life because he plays cornerback and wide receiver. I am anxious to see how exactly they execute this experiment.
Well, and don't forget, obviously, the Magnificent Gladstone clearly discovered Travis Hunter. This gym. Like, at least that's the way it sounded when he talked about it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, he just discovered this
nobody else knew about
hidden commodity that we'd never heard of, this Travis Hunter guy who came out of nowhere, apparently.
Magnificent Gladstone sees the world differently than the rest of us do.
Yeah.
That's his message.
100%. You know what? As an offshoot, and I know we're going to do this again in the 7 o'clock hour, but as an offshoot, I am interested to see which one is going to happen first, since you brought it up,
yeah.
The Travis Hunter thing. Which one is going to happen first? Is Nico Collins going to burn Travis Hunter,
yeah.
Or is Derek Stingley, as he's known to do, picking off Trevor Lawrence,
yeah.
Is he going to clamp Travis Hunter and pick off a Trevor Lawrence pass attempt to said Travis
Hunter. Who was it that
Which said, one's going to happen first?
Yeah, yeah. Who was it? Oh, it was Jake Andrews that said on Texans radio, people are going to know when they wake up on Monday that they played the Texans.
Yes.
Travis Hunter's going to wake up on Mondays knowing he played the Texans.
Yeah. Well,
you're going against Nico on one side and Stingley on the other side of the ball for 120 snaps or whatever it is.
To be fair, if they are pot committed to this whole playing both ways thing, Travis Hunter's going to wake up in the morning knowing he played anybody.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Because they're going to run him into the damn ground. But especially the case with the Texans because of what they've got at wide receiver and what they've got at cornerback, those positions specifically that he also plays,
yeah.
But he would be going against when he's playing the other, the Texans are strong in both areas.
Jacksonville's number one. Number two is Dallas. This is the latest update. This is from Adam Schefter on the Micah Parsons situation with his contract.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Dallas Cowboys have not even made a contractual offer to Micah Parsons yet. So this is a conversation that apparently could linger on through the summer because they're nowhere in the negotiation game. And this is a familiar script for the Dallas Cowboys. We've seen it before from them. They did this very same thing last year. If we take a look, they waited until September 10th to sign Dak Prescott. They waited until August 27th to sign CeeDee Lamb. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that they had moved a little quicker and they signed Dak at the beginning of the offseason in May, around the time that Jared Goff got signed. You can't tell me that Dak Prescott at that time wouldn't have done a deal in the low 50s. I believe he would have. You can't tell me that if CeeDee Lamb had done his deal in late April, that he wouldn't have done a deal for 30, 31, 32. In either case, you're talking about $9, $10 million that the Dallas Cowboys were forced to spend because they didn't act sooner. You know what $9 to $10 million buys you? A running back like Derrick Henry.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Dude.
So that's a great way to lay it out, man. It's a good way to frame it by Schefter. I think two things there, B. Scott, just to make this, to pull the Texans into this thing. I'm so happy that Nick Caserio does business the way that he does business. I don't mind him setting markets for guys. I like getting it done. I think it makes this a place that players like to be. I think it makes it easy for him to work with agents. I think the deals that he's done have by and large been pretty – the ones he's gotten done early – have been good deals for the Texans. Nico Collins in particular has aged into an excellent deal for the Texans. The other thing that's crazy about this Micah Parsons thing is Micah Parsons is inarguably one of the three or four most impactful defensive players in football over the last two or three years. these are usually things, this dance they're having is usually something with a player that caliber you're doing after year three. He's 4 years in now. He's about to head into his fifth-year option. Cowboys are a joke.
Imagine having a Micah Parsons, who I think you could borderline say is a generational talent. I mean, the guy can play. And from this standpoint, he's elite as a pass rusher, but can play damn near any position on the defense for the most part. He's that kind of an anomaly as an athlete. Imagine having somebody like that and jacking around with him. And
he
waiting,
made him an offer,
and waiting
to
until his, well, even just waiting until his fifth-year option to get to this point, and then you're here and you're not talking.
Yeah.
You're not having the conversation. You made the point about Nick Caserio. I agree with everything that you said from a practical standpoint. But here's where I'm at with the Cowboys and in comparison to the Texans. I'm so glad that Nick Caserio, Kyle McNair, everybody that's in charge over here at NRG, that these guys aren't attention-seeking in their negotiations.
Right.
Because clearly, as Adam Schefter just laid it out, that crap can cost you money.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe, and I'll go to my grave thinking this, that they just get some kind of thrill out of the attention, out of the commotion that comes around this conversation. And it cost them around $10 million. It possibly cost them a shot at having Derrick Henry and up in the ante on their team. I'm so glad that we don't have figures like that in this building.
Kevin Clark of ESPN had a hilarious quote yesterday. I bookmarked it. We'll play it tomorrow maybe, where he said, if you went to Jerry Jones and said that the football gods were going to gift you three Super Bowl championships, but you can't do any more press conferences.
Ooh.
I forget how he phrased it. It's much funnier than I'm about to. But basically said Jerry would choose the press conferences.
I would say that their results would be the same that they've been for the last 30 years. They would be championship-less as they have been.
Jacksonville, Cowboys, the other two I'll get to real quick because we're up against it. Pittsburgh with Aaron Rodgers, how that whole thing plays out. This peace and love version of Aaron Rodgers that's coming in here to play a sport that's basically trench warfare.
Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin.
Like, how's that going to go? That's really interesting. And then the Cleveland four-way quarterback battle is something that we can enjoy on so many levels here. One, we don't have a quarterback battle here, thank God, hopefully for the next decade plus. Number two, Deshaun Watson is tangentially still involved in this thing, you know. So those are the two big ones. And number three, it's just intriguing to see what's going to happen. You know, Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel, Joe Flacco. And who am I missing? Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I thought the biggest training camp mess that Deshaun Watson would find himself in was 4 years ago when he was out here running scout team, when he was demanding a trade.
No.
I did not foresee that he would be a part of a four to five man quarterback competition out there in Cleveland.
Yeah, or really just a spectator for four guys battling for his job, really.
Yeah. How do they
He's
have
coming
five,
off an Achilles.
How do they have five guys and everybody feels like a man without a country?
Yeah.
No one feels like they belong.
That's fascinating. That's why I can't wait to watch it. And it's not us.
No.
There's a lot of schadenfreude going on with those four camps I just picked. They're all not us, thank God.
Yes.
All right, let's get to headlines. Training camp is here. Maybe a little bit of a warning from one particular NFL head coach to the media on how to, you know, get back in press conference mode. We'll have that in headlines. We'll update you on the injury situation with both the Texans and the Astros. Retirement from a former Texan as well. Prominent one-year Texan. We got a lot to get to, man, in headlines. We got a lot to get to in the 7 o'clock hour as well. We're live at Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Keep it tuned right here, Sports Radio 610.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, we're live at Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. Practice gets started today at 9 a.m. We're with you till 8 a.m. and we'll hot tag it over to Texans Radio after that. In the Loop will be out here from 10 to 2 today. Updates on the injury situations with the Texans. I'll rapid fire these. These came from an Instagram. This might have been Aaron Wilson who had a lot of these bullet points. Joe Mixon on track to be ready for camp. Could be eased in slowly. He, of course, was in a walking boot during the spring, you know, OTAs and minicamp. Didn't do much. Jalen Noll didn't do anything other than off to the side stuff at mandatory minicamp. The rookie wide receiver, he's on track to be ready to go today. That was a hamstring injury. He's fully recovered. Christian Harris making a, quote, sound recovery from a lingering calf injury. That's one to watch today. Does number 48 run out here? I don't know if it's pads they're doing it in today or if it's just shells. I have no idea. Whatever the attire du jour is, He's 48 out here doing things with everybody else today. It's a big thing to watch.
Yeah,
today.
And what exactly constitutes is, I'm not trying to pick apart or parse Aaron Wilson's words here, but because of the injury history and what we understand the situation to have been with Christian Harris, what constitutes a sound recovery for this guy? Earlier in the week, Sean, we kind of dabbled a little bit with our potential breakout season candidates for the Texans, yeah. And I put Christian Harris in that conversation just for the simple fact that he's somebody that we know to be talented, that we know to have a high ceiling, and just hasn't quite been able to hit it yet because of the injuries, both in the start of his career, his rookie year, and then most recently last year. So I'm very intrigued to see what Christian Harris has to offer, not just in training camp, but throughout the season.
He's had basically a period of time. The amount of time he's been a good football player for this team is literally like 3 months.
Yeah.
And he's heading into his fourth season. There's so much potential there. That's what's so frustrating.
It's like a 10-week span.
Those 3 months were scintillating. They were excellent. He was really, really good.
Dude, I can remember, not to get this off track, but I can remember texting Ron to show Hughley at one point, telling him, man, you know what? Christian Harris sucks. And immediately he like turned into some kind of all-pro, it felt
like.
Yeah,
it was the middle of the 2023 season. A switch flipped at that. Like right around that Tampa Bay-Cincinnati part of the schedule there. Week 9 and 10, it just flipped for him.
Doesn't suck. Just
really cool to see.
Just injured all the time.
Damian Pierce fully recovered from a quad. Danico Autry is going to be eased into camp. Older player who's been dealing with knee stuff for some time now. The target for Danico Autry is week 1. And then Jimmy Ward, that's a big one too. I would imagine Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryan's both going to get asked Jimmy Ward questions. This is the first chance that either will have had to talk to the media since Jimmy Ward was arrested back in mid-June.
Yeah.
Literally like 5 minutes after we got done interviewing Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast, the report comes out about Jimmy Ward. So so this will be the first chance we've heard from Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio meets with the media at 8:30. D'Amico Ryan's after practice today.
Yeah, and I'm not as passionate one way or another about what they do with Jimmy Ward, but I am intrigued by it for a lot of the reasons that we talked about earlier in the week, just the fact that they're not going to be as reliant on him as they were when he first got here.
Yeah.
So that's just another way of saying they don't really need Jimmy Ward, but I understand the history and that there's an affection there. There's a relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm very intrigued to see how exactly they handle it and how they view this whole legal situation that he's in.
I'm going to save the warning salvo for media members for 7 o'clock because I want to get all our headlines in here. It's not really a headline. It's just a funny bit of audio.
Very funny.
Then I feel like you'll have a good take on because you're at a lot of press conferences.
I will have a take on this.
Okay, good, good. Astros win last night. Bryce Matthews, the hero once again, just one night after hitting his first two career home runs, first two home runs of his career against the Diamondbacks to almost single-handedly win the game on Monday. He does the exact same thing on Tuesday. Just one home run this time around. A two-run home run in the top of the eighth with the Astros trailing 1-0. Gets Framber Valdez his 11th win of the season, 13th straight time Framber's taken the mound where the team has gone on to win that game. Framber is the ace of this staff unquestionably right now, just given how Hunter Brown has kind of scuffled over the last few starts. But Bryce Matthews is a big story, B. Scott. Three home runs in two games. Big play to end the game. A double play that just a smash shot to him that he made kind of a, you know, going to the ground, sort of sliding stop on. Was able to turn two to get Brian King out of a bad situation. He was in. Josh Hader unavailable last night just because of workload. Brian King loads the bases in six pitches and then is able to kind of work his way out of it with a strikeout and a double play. And the Astros five games up on the Mariners.
Yeah, the two home runs the previous night won them the game. The home run this night was huge, gave them the lead. But then I think what really won them the game was what you mentioned at the end is the defensive
play. He didn't make that play. It's a 3-3 game.
Yeah, so both things, honestly, because it's the run production and the run prevention. He does gives you the best of both worlds. I think it's really cool. Also, man, as a side note, like Jose Altuve and the move to left field and what Bryce Matthews represents, I'm kind of like from a nostalgic standpoint, think it's kind of cool that you got a potential for a passing of the torch of the second base, the preeminent second baseman of this, you know, of this Astros era. I understand, you know, Craig Biggio, but you got Jose Altuve, an all-time great Astro, potentially passing the torch to Bryce Matthews.
That's cool.
You love to see it.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's cool. Not such good news. Lance McCullers back to the IL. This time a blister on a finger on his pitching hand. They're saying he got, like, I was reading the reports, so, like, they sent him back to Houston to get it looked at him like it's a blister. I guess I get sending him back to Houston. He's not serving a purpose in Arizona.
Yeah.
But it was just funny. They made a blister sound like one of these things you need an MRI for.
Dude, but it is always some SH with this guy.
He is,
like, he is always
snake-bitten Lance McCullers.
I love Lance. But, God,
well,
man, get it together.
I think it's an indicator of where Lance is right now as a pitcher, that news came down yesterday and doesn't get nearly the reaction that a Paredes or even a Jake Myers or one of the regulars going down does. Or, you know, or even if it were a pitcher, you know, like, you know, Spencer Arrighetti is a way more crucial asset to this team right now than Lance McCullers is. I would submit the guy pitching today, Brandon Walter, is much more trustworthy right now than Lance McCullers. Let's call it what it is. Lance McCullers, independent of any blister he's got on his right hand, if the postseason started next week, it is a major question mark if he's even on the playoff roster right now.
Yeah, I can personalize this shoulder shrug indifference that you're kind of getting at here. Yesterday when this news come down, I'm tapped in with the Houston Chronicle. I get a notification from Greg Rajan,
yeah,
who wants us to put out a breaking news email to the – we had an Astros-specific email list. And, hey, we got some breaking news here with Lance. And I did the whole thing of, yeah, I'll do it. But guess what? We don't really – this doesn't really hit the
same – it doesn't pop.
In terms of breaking news.
Like
I'm just not feeling it the way that I would normally feel it.
Yeah.
I did the breaking news alert, but it didn't feel the same.
No, it didn't. It didn't at all. Tyrann Mathieu retiring. Drafted in 2013, so Tyrann got in a nice 12-year career.
Yeah,
one of those seasons spent here in Houston in 2018. Kind of feels like a fever dream. You forget about all the guys that kind of came passing through the years. The Tyrann Mathieu, who I would say he's going to be one of those guys, in my opinion, B. Scott. I'm kind of a Hall of Fame enthusiast.
Yeah.
I'm big into the analytics that go into that sort of accolade.
I was literally going to bring it up if you didn't.
Three-time first-team All-Pro. Unfortunately, one of those seasons was not 2018, but he was very good for the Texans, and I thought, you know, real good leader. I would have brought him back. Three-time Pro Bowler. 2010 All-Decade Team is the interesting one. If you make the three-time All-Pro is one of those, you're going to be on the ballot every year. You'll be one of the 25, maybe even get down to 15 or 10 at a time, you know, the finalists. It's not a lock that you ever make it, let alone be like a first ballot guy. The All-Decade Team is an interesting one.
Yeah,
the vast majority of those
guys make
the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't be offended if Tyrann Mathieu got put in the Hall of Fame. You know what? I do think his future, I think he'd be really good on TV.
Yes.
Every interview I ever watched with him, very thoughtful, very intelligent,
yes,
and very football intelligent, like very conventional intelligent, but very, very high football IQ. I think he would be really, really good. And there's so many outlets for these guys nowadays. You know, before it was just, well, we'll go to ESPN, I'll be a studio guy. He can do his own streaming if he wants to. He can, you know, collaborate with somebody, whatever. He was always somebody I always enjoyed listening to speak.
Conventional intelligent and about as football intelligent as you'll find, right?
Like, Ivy League football.
Maybe underrated smart football player. And you could even tell that going back to the LSU days, which were in and of themselves like a movie. You know, I know that things ended poorly there for him, but like when he was playing, man, he was one of the few guys that, you know, didn't play quarterback or running back, but he basically played everything else.
He was a Heisman finalist.
And honestly had a decent case to win it. So I'm right there with you. The All-Decade Team is an interesting part of, like, his story and how that, you know, what kind of case that makes for him in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
My analytical hardline on the Hall of Fame is, like, if you make five All-Pros, I feel like they shouldn't even vote. They should just let you –
That should be, like, the benchmark.
If you get five All-Pros, and I got a hard time finding a guy that's got five All-Pros that's not a Hall of Famer.
Right.
He's got three,
and
then I feel like the All-Decade Team is, like, an extra one that's kind of, like, four. He's borderline there. He's probably not a first ballot, but I'd be shocked if he doesn't get in.
It's harder to get in now. They've made it harder, by the way. They did, not to get too nerdy into it, and people are in their cars, and it's a little complicated, but they've changed how they do the voting down the stretch when they get down to the finalists, and that's why there's only four guys going in this year.
Right.
It's hard. It's a little harder to get in, so I'd be totally cool with it. I really enjoyed having him on the team here for a year. So congrats to him, man. Great career. Won a couple Super Bowls. Yeah. At least one.
He won the one, but he was a big part of it.
Huge part of it. His first team All-Pro.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huge part of that Super Bowl run.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go here, live at Texans training camp. Sun coming up. People starting to roll in. Going to be a great season, man. Cannot wait. We're going to talk about it here in the next segment. Where is the AFC South exactly in the tapestry of the NFL? We'll get into that. And the warning shot for media members. Don't be on your phone if this head coach is the guy you're asking questions. So it's a guy we're very familiar with here in Houston. We'll do that coming up next. Stay there. All right, we'll lay it out here in a second. Where is the AFC South in the tapestry of the NFL? Where are the Texans in the athletics power rankings? We'll get to that shortly as the sun's coming up here live at the Methodist Training Center. Houston Texans training camp 2025 underway in a couple of hours. They'll start practicing. Nick Caserio meets with the media here at 8:30 today. D'Amico Ryan's meeting with the media after practice today. So it starts. Today it begins. And as I mentioned, press conferences, B. Scott, this happened yesterday at Tennessee. Mike Vrabel, of course, is the head coach there. We're familiar with Vrabel here. His time as an assistant coach, coaching the linebackers. One of the big personalities out here, yelling at his crew and whatnot. And obviously did some nice things in Tennessee. And now, I say it was in Tennessee. He's in New England now. What am I saying?
Right.
This did not take place in Tennessee. This took place up in New England
yesterday.
We're
so used to him being in Tennessee.
Yes.
But he is now back at home, I guess you could say.
He is. And the Patriots are getting a lot of love, man. 8.5, the number of wins for the Patriots in Vegas. One less than the Texans.
Yeah, I feel like
something's amiss here.
I feel like Vrabel has a lot to do with that. Like, he's got a lot of respect around the league. Of course, Drake May showed some promise. You know, quarterback and head coach is usually the indicator. Like, if you got a good head coach, you got a good quarterback, it's a team to believe in. I feel like most people think that Drake May is trending in the right direction,
yeah,
and obviously respect Mike Vrabel as a head coach.
And the Dolphins are backsliding. The Jets are a disaster. So they've got four games right there. They're going to play a fourth-place schedule, I think, right? They picked third in the draft last year, so they're going to play a – you know, there's three variable games are all going to be against teams that were in last place last year. So maybe, man, you know, 8.5 is a little rich. I wouldn't touch that. Now, if the amount of salt and energy that the Patriots bring to the regular season is equivalent to Vrabel yesterday at his press conference, then I'll take the over on 8.5, because here was Vrabel getting asked a question by a media member that apparently had just been asked and answered in long form moments before.
How do you feel about having guys
back? I mean, whether you were in a coma when I answered Tom's question or typing on your phone or tweeting, I don't know, but I spent 5 minutes answering that question. And I could go back through it, but I'd rather not.
Okay, so that's Vrabel. I mean, like, classic. Like, that's, I feel like I'm living back in the Bill O'Brien era again. That's definitely something O'Brien would have done.
It's so funny.
So here's my question. You are a press conference enthusiast.
Yes.
You're a frequent attender of press conferences across all sports here in this town.
Great.
First, the slippery slope that journalists at press conferences live in nowadays, when there's this race to tweet out transcribed quotes to their social media audience. I feel like the media members are already in harm's way.
Yes.
But within our contingency of the media here in Houston, do you have any sort of power ranking on most likely to get caught in a Vrabel and that dude type of situation?
Yeah, so before I answer with my power ranking, I do want to say this is one of the things that for me...
I love that you have a power ranking.
Well, I guard against this. Like, I have a rule of thumb to avoid being in this exact reporter situation where you're dealing with... Now, every coach isn't going to handle it like Mike Vrabel. I thought that that was comical. And I imagine that there's probably some relationships built where that was probably lighthearted, as harsh as it did kind of sound. But you don't want to be in this position as a reporter. And so one of the things that I'll do is if I show up late, if I miss anything.
No questions.
No questions.
Yeah, that's a good rule to have.
Because there's the slight possibility that whatever question that I was going to ask has already been asked and answered. And therefore you get this type of response from the coach.
Yeah.
But I do have a ranking for you. and I did this because... For me, I thought about guys that would be a really good sport about this if it got out to them, if they heard about it.
Yeah.
And these are also go-getters. This is really a credit to the fact that they're stretched thin and that they're hustling.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be in multiple places at once, all while being one person. And so you can kind of understand how they can fall under this trap.
Yeah, none of these guys are playing Candy Crush on their phones when they're at these press conferences.
No, they're working.
They're doing work. You know, they're trying to get information out to the audience is what they're doing. Continue.
Let me get
power rankings.
I'm going to start with one. I know sometimes we count down. I'm going to just rip off the band-aid.
Yeah. Who's number one?
I'm going to go with my guy Randy Mack. Randy McAvoy.
Randy McAvoy? Oh! Yeah,
you weren't expecting this, huh?
And no.
I love you, Randy Mac. My Sam Houston State brethren. I was on KPRC on Sunday. Love it every time
you
Randy
texts me. You know you're going to see all these guys in about an hour.
This is why I pick some of these guys, because I know the ones that are going to be good sports about it.
Yeah, Randy will be a good sport.
Who I actually love and have great personal relationships with. But here's why I say this,
though. I need some analysis here.
First of all, it's a question that Randy would ask. Just on the face. Forget whether it was asked already or like, how did the guys look? You know, the TV guys tend to ask some of these questions that'll get those types of sound bites. Yeah. So Randy McAvoy would ask this question, but I could also see him being late because he's trying to do so much.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to take a shot at KPRC, but they've downsized.
That's an industry thing. It's just where the industry is.
But specific to our market now, KHOU still has 2 to 3 guys that are covering sports.
Yep.
KPRC only has the one, and that's Randy McAvoy. Yeah. And so I could see Randy McAvoy having to do something right before the press conference or getting there 2 to 3 minutes late and missing the initial question, but still wanting to get this question in, making sure that this question was asked. And so my number one is going to be Randy Mack.
Okay. Do you have a 2 and a 3 on this?
I have a 2 and a 3.
Okay, give me the top 3. Randy Mack number 1.
Randy Mack number 1, Jonathan Alexander number 2, because he's the one that's got to ask all the questions. He's the beat writer for the paper in town. Houston Chronicle, the newspaper in town.
Yeah.
He's got to be on record with everything. And I've watched Jonathan. Obviously, I work with Jonathan at the Houston Chronicle, but I've also observed him and watched him work. I know that he's trying to interview guys away from the podium, away from the press conference, do one-on-ones, but also come to the press conference and find out what was happening at the press conference. Very easy for him to have missed that question. And my third one.
Yeah.
My guy, DJ Bienemy of ESPN. And DJ, look, some part of me envies him because I feel like he's living his best young single man life.
Hell yeah.
You know, he's a good-looking guy.
Good like, shape.
Good in shape. Yeah. I could see DJ just coming here straight, just laid off of a workout.
Right.
You know, he's a track and field athlete in college.
Yeah.
DJ Bienemy is somebody that I could definitely see being in a position
like this. You're looking at it through the lens of these are guys who might show up late to the press conference and ask a question that's already been asked.
Yeah.
See, I'm thinking about it through the lens of guys that were on their phone and not paying attention because they're disseminating information out there.
Now, that's literally all of them. But if you want to go under that specific umbrella, I got another one for you.
Mine would be Aaron Wilson. So we're on the same page. I don't know how Aaron gets all the quotes out as fast as he does on the phone at these press conferences.
He's a dat-gum machine.
He's a machine, yeah.
Like,
he doesn't have typos. I mean, AI may do some of this for him. I have no idea.
Well, no, and to his credit, though, he's got a lot of practice at this because it's not like he just waits till the season to start before he does this, right?
Yeah.
He's on all the time, round the clock, tweeting information. Sometimes it's incremental and borderline useless. Most of the time it's extremely useful, and you got to credit the work ethic. But Aaron Wilson is definitely the guy who would have his head in his phone and somehow miss this. The thing he's less likely to do is actually miss it because he's good at multitasking while he's doing all the tweeting.
Okay.
But he would be the one with his head buried in his phone 100%.
So I like that your power ranking of the guys who might be late to the press conference.
Yep.
But for good reasons, you said. You know, because they're doing so many things. They're multitasking.
And because I know from experience. I'm not guessing on those.
But you don't have a notebook out where you're taking attendance or anything.
No,
it's just a gut feel.
No, we've just been around each other enough to where
we don't want them to think that B's got some sort of like press conference Karen or something
that. No, but a part of our job is to pick up on tendencies.
Monitor the others.
And to be observant. And I'm not just observing the players and coaches. I'm observing my peers.
Oh, my God. I love you for that.
And I know what you guys are doing.
That's hilarious. Texans 8th in the athletic power rankings.
That's more like
I like that a little bit better than that roster ranking we did on ESPN where they had him 13th.
Yeah, man.
8th feels a little more like what I'm feeling, right? Look, they've been one of the final 8 teams standing the last 2 years. Put them 8th.
I wish I had done my podcast with this list in mind instead of the one that we – so I did my podcast immediately after the show and with the ESPN list in mind, right? Thinking, you know, talking about the Texans. Are they a top 10?
And your podcast is?
The B-Block Podcast.
B-Block
you can
podcast.
Get it wherever you get
download
your podcast.
It.
And also on YouTube, same place where you can find us on Sports Radio 610.
Yep.
But I do that with in mind the ranking that the ESPN has. And we dove into that and saw how whoever wrote that thing
might be a casual, might not actually be following everything.
Yeah, based on who they had in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
Jimmy Ward is a starting safety.
This feels much more, and I'll give the Athletics some credit because it's not like they got a presence here or anything. Like,
yeah.
It's not like they're still covering the Texans intimately, but they got a much better beat on it. I think that 8 is a much more suitable ranking.
Yeah, it's to me. I like 8th as well, more so than 13th. I'd probably split the difference. If they were a 10th on something like this, I wouldn't be angry about it. I'm not angry about 13th. I just disagree with it. I think it boils down pretty simply. As long as the injury toll on this team is a normal injury toll. There's going to be injuries this year. We know that. It's football. But as long as it's normal, it's not like it was certainly 2 years ago where nobody missed more games than the Houston Texans roster, more games, potential games played than the Houston Texans. As long as it's just a normal injury year and that C.J. Stroud's not affected by that, this season will go as the offensive line goes. And by that I mean, if this offensive line is average, this team will go to the AFC title game.
Well,
they're average. I'm not saying if they need to be great in order for this team to be great. They don't. There's enough great parts of this team already to where if the offensive line just protects C.J. Stroud at a normal level and opens up holes in the running game at a normal level, this is going to be a really, really, really good football team.
I mean, let's just make it plain, man. It's the difference between what made them a cute story or a nice little fun team and an actual serious contender. Like, what's the difference between here and there for the Texans, and what has it been? And especially last year, it's the offensive line. And so that it stands to reason mostly everything is either the same or similarly situated, if you will. So you got to think that they're talented enough to be in a very similar position to what they were in last year. The difference, are they going to be another 10-7, first round win, but divisional round exit?
Yeah.
The difference in that is going to be the offensive line, so I'm right there. As far as this ranking goes, though, the thing that I like the most is just that they're not behind, the Texans, that is, are not behind the dadgum Bengals.
I
didn't have the patience for that, given all that's going on with the Bengals and their contract situations on the defensive side of the ball, both Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart, their rookie, and the fact that they were so heavily dependent on they were offense or bust. Their defense could not stop a nosebleed last year. And I don't have much of a reason to believe that that's going to change much going into this season. They're being ranked off the strength of Joe Burrow, whereas I feel like the Texans, the entire team, the totality of the team is what's being considered. They got the quarterback. They got the head coach. And then they got them dogs on defense that we were talking about in the open set.
Well, in this one, too, like Tampa Bay is 16. That feels a little more – that actually feels like they're underselling Tampa a little
but I
think the Texans are a better team than Tampa. We'll find out. Look, they play a lot of these teams that we're talking about hovering around them. The only three teams on their schedule that are ahead of them in these athletic power rankings are the big three in the AFC. Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo, all among the top five teams in the NFL in this. Believe it or not, if you were to add up all the rankings of all four teams in each division, and this is, keep in mind, the AFC South in these rankings are a division where the other teams besides the Texans at 8 are the Jags at 26, the Colts at 27, and the Titans at 31. If you add all those rankings together, you know, the higher the number, the worse the division is.
Yeah.
Actually not the worst division in football. Even though you got three of the bottom eight teams in the division, the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the best team in that division. They're barely in the upper half in the power rankings. And the other three teams, Atlanta is 24, and Carolina and the Saints are both among the bottom four teams in the NFL. They're 28 and 29, so among the bottom five teams in the NFL. You add up all the numbers, if my math is correct, the NFC South is actually, I mean, that's two bad divisions right there, man.
But this checks out to me, though.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
The NFC South, I don't know about you, but it checks out to me just in terms of logic before you do the hard math, just thinking about the teams and thinking about where they've been over the last couple of years.
And the quarterbacks division,
and the
too.
Quarterbacks. I've thought of the NFC South like this for a while, or at least the last couple of years. They're the division where the winner could have a losing record, could easily be 7-9. And thanks to the Texans, I think the Texans are what's saving the AFC South from being exactly that. I think everybody thinks that the Texans are a double-digit win team, even if the rest of the division is bringing the property value down.
Yeah.
But in the NFC South, somebody's got to win that division, but it's almost like somebody's got to win it by default. And whoever does win it could very well do so
with a losing record. Yep. That's I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's the feel of the division, that absolutely could happen on a given year.
It happened a few years ago. I think one of Tom Brady's years, they were 8-9 and won the division, Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken. Payne and Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. I mentioned the offensive line for the Houston Texans. Tim Settle, who we talked about a little bit earlier. We're gonna do our repeat our hype segment from the opener. We rewarded the 6 a.m. listeners by getting super hyped for the season. We're going to do it again at 7:45.
And Tim Settle will make an appearance.
Tim Settle will absolutely make an appearance here right now. He was on Texans All Access with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, and they talked to him. We've heard a lot of people on the offensive side of the ball talking about this offensive line throughout this summer period and mini camp and OTAs, and we've heard some of the skill guys on offense. The defensive, we haven't heard much from the defensive side. Tim Settle's a guy who's going to go against this offensive line every day out at training camp. Here is his assessment of where the Texans are on the offensive line compared to where they were last year.
You know, just overall, just a scheme wise, you know, I feel like, you know, it's more like they look more of a unit, you know, they're more look in sync, you know, I feel like the new offense that we're going to run this year is going to be beneficial for them. You know, I'm excited just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, we go against them. We see it. I can definitely, it's a big difference of what we did from last year. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it against another team. You know, definitely have hope. And I definitely love what I'm seeing, especially from the defensive side of how the offense is operating now.
All right. So that was Tim Settle. That answer fits in the same bucket with all the other answers we heard, and I'm going to break it down real, real simple. From what I'm hearing, my layman's ears, what I hear from everybody who's talked about this offensive line and this offense in general, is it feels like they know what the hell they're doing this year. It felt at times last year, often, frequently, that the offensive line was clueless in what they were doing. They didn't know where to be or where to go or who to block. I saw a graphic last night, B. Scott, on on social media that had it was one of these bar charts where the bigger the bar your team had, the worse you were on the offensive line, and the stat that they had was unblocked pressures. Ooh. Just pressures where you're just letting guys take runs at your quarterback. And the Texans didn't have the most, but they were right up there. Them and the Bears were right next to each other with a massive number, like 57 or 60 or some crazy number. That C.J. Stroud, you know, like basically like three or four a game, that C.J. Stroud had to deal with somebody running at him like they were being blocked by the invisible man.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And honestly, man, it's the reason why I fixated on C.J. Stroud's shoulder when that whole thing was a story during OTAs and minicamp.
No.
It's because, like, man, the shoulder aside, it's just the fact that this guy is so valuable. And you're treating him like he's not, you know, as if like it's just okay to run and hit your quarterback. It really was just me speaking to the importance of protecting this guy, because if you don't, these are the things that can happen. His shoulder can get banged up.
Yeah.
He can get concussed. He can be out for a stretch. And God forbid that you're, you know, operating this. You know, we're here to be excited about the team. God forbid that at some point they're operating without their quarterback, without C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
But on these comments from Tim Settle, it keeps bringing me back, and I'm right there with you on what you said about it, reminding you of everything that's been said about the offensive line up to this point, about this new make offensive line or new look offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think about D'Amico Ryans during whether it was OTAs or minicamp, but we were right here in the bubble, right to our left.
Yeah.
And I remember D'Amico Ryans just telling this story about how whichever offensive lineman had gotten out here first,
mm-hmm.
they waited on the rest of the offensive linemen to join them before they ran out here as a unit, and it just kind of, at least to D'Amico Ryans, spoke to their togetherness.
To their camaraderie. Yeah.
And you're talking about how it seems like, you know, one of the big differences is how they know what they're doing. And that's going to matter a great deal, that you know what you're doing versus not when we get out there on the field. But around that and kind of just more bird's eye view, for me, it's the togetherness. It's the fact that last year, the offensive line felt like a bunch of solo artists.
Yeah.
Like, and not to say all of them were selfish per se, but it's like you had five solo artists as opposed to a group of five,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to instead of being a boy band, they're out there, they're Bobby Brown, they're Justin Timberlake, they're Beyonce, instead of being, you know, New Edition or NSYNC or Destiny's Child, right?
Man.
Like, they're not a group,
no.
They're the solo artists. And so
it was a bad music festival.
It was an awful music festival. Yeah. The porta potties didn't work. It was hot. I mean, it was just an awful freaking music festival. So hopefully they are singing and playing much better tunes this year.
Speaking of music, just shifting gears. Sad news yesterday. The first tweet that I saw that Ozzy Osbourne had passed away was from some news outlet I didn't know, and it was just one sentence. It said, Ozzy Osbourne has died at age 76.
Yeah.
And that was it, and I'm like, okay, I hope this isn't true. I think that anytime I see that on social media, I hope this isn't true. And then you go to your Google machine, and there's already articles up about it and whatnot. Man, Ozzy Osbourne, that was about as big an outpouring yesterday. I mean, radio stations kind of just flipping formats for the day. All kinds of voices and people from the musical world, and Ozzy Osbourne was a crossover hit. Like, he was not just in music, but obviously reality TV, a world that I'm very in tune with. WWE.
Yeah,
he's had several appearances going all the way back to WrestleMania 2.
Yeah,
when he accompanied the British Bulldogs to the ring at WrestleMania 2.
Yeah,
in their title win over the Dream Team, Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah,
WWF titles. That was an outpouring yesterday, man. For Ozzy Osbourne, thoughts and prayers,
yeah.
R.I.P.
Ozzy Osbourne, I know you said it even transcends music, but as far as music goes, about as influential of a rock and roll figure as you'll find.
Yep.
I mean, as much so as Led Zeppelin or anybody who you want to name. Like, just think about it. Ozzy Osbourne is right there with him. And like you said, all of these other moments, pop culture moments aside from music, I mean, the music thing is, I think, is good enough. It's big enough. And then just to kind of transcend that, man. I think about him peeing in front of the Alamo. That's an infamous story.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the type of life you want to live. Whenever it is that you do go to meet your maker, you want folks to have countless stories and instances of you living your best life. And boy, did Ozzy do
you
that.
You want St. Peter to have to pull out an entire book.
Yes.
To go, all right, here we go. We got to go through your balance sheet now,
yeah.
Ozzy. 76 years old. The conversion chart is, for a normal human being, he basically lived to be 145, is what I estimate, just based on the amount of damage he did to himself through the years.
Yeah.
Let's pay tribute to Ozzy Osbourne, because he had an iconic singing of the baseball hit, Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field. And I feel like 720 for this show, because it's only a two-hour show, feels like it's about the seventh inning of our show.
Yeah.
So let's do the seventh inning stretch here, and let's have Ozzy Osbourne sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game for all of you.
All right, Chicago. I want to hear a real, real crazy crowd start singing with me. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Are you ready? Let's go out to the ball game. Let's go out to the river. Take me in the river. Make us sure. I don't remember what I have to do. And I've run out of the garden. And we got a little 43-2-3 strikes. You're out.
Dude, I cannot disagree with our YouTube commenter Ray anymore. He says, God, this is so painful to listen to. That was maybe, you know, some people are awkward with cringeworthy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do awkward well. That was hilarious, especially when
he's into it.
When
man.
They finally get to the numbers and he goes, and he can't even get through one, but he goes, he knows what comes after one.
Yeah.
Two. Two was like the first coherent thing that he said once they started singing.
Well, and his wife was right there with him, and that was at Wrigley Field. And the big tradition at Wrigley Field is after you do that, you scream, let's get some runs. And so she actually jumped in and screamed that at the very end, which is what a good wife should do, man.
So good.
Fill your gaps, you know?
I just love the idea of being some type of musical icon and legend the way that Ozzy is, but either not knowing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, like not knowing the words, or being so inebriated. Like, I don't even know. I can't even imagine what he could have been on.
The
drugs that he would have been on, I wouldn't even know who to ask to find.
It's a miracle he made it to the ballpark that day.
Amazing. And a miracle he made it to 76.
76, man. That's a hell of a run for Ozzy Osbourne. like 30 years ago, you'd have taken the under on 75.5.
Oh, 100%. And anybody else that you ask, hey, you could live a life like that.
Yeah.
And you'll last till 76.
Give it to me, man.
You'll go out there
Where's the paperwork?
Your best freaking
life. I'll sign right now. All right, Texans training camp. We're live here. Sun coming up, and it's people starting to kind of roll in here. Just saw Mark Vandermeer kind of roaming around a little bit. He and John Harris will take over at 8 o'clock today and for the next handful of days here on Sports Radio 610. I'm anxious to see what kind of camp this is. I was thinking about this yesterday, B. Scott. Through the various personalities, through the various successes and failures, through pandemics, through travel, all these things, we've had some very unique training camps, both here in Houston and outside of Houston over the last few years. I've been fortunate enough to cover this team since 2007. I've been even more fortunate to be with the flagship since the 2014 training camp, which was Bill O'Brien's first training camp as the head coach of the Houston Texans. So this will be at Sports Radio 610. This will be my 12th training camp. I was just jotting like back of the cocktail napkin yesterday, like what have been the best or most memorable ones, good or bad? Because some have been memorable for bad reasons, but memorable. And I've got my list right here. All right. And some of these I know you've been at too.
Yeah.
The two that are tied for fifth, I know you didn't go to. Those were the ones at the Greenbrier in 2017 and 2018. I don't want to spend too much time on those because that's not very inclusive. Most of our audience didn't go to that. I only bring it up to say this. One, it was awesome. If you can go, because they're going to go for a week.
Yeah.
This training camp, you know, two weeks from today, I'll be in West Virginia covering training camp for that whole week of August the 4th. If you can go, it's awesome because hardly any fans go, but they do have bleachers there for the fans. You're at the Greenbrier. You don't have to stay at the Greenbrier. There's plenty of Airbnbs. Beautiful part of the country. That was fun just because it was a nice bonding camaraderie experience. We all went. Ted Johnson and I'll never forget, driving from Charlotte up to the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. We were stopping at every barbecue shack in the middle of the mountains. It was great. We had a blast. So it was really fun. There were bears in our backyard at our Airbnb, like very rural.
Yeah.
So that was number five. Number four, and I know you were here for this one, Camp Cully. So I call that one the West Virginia. I have names for all these. That was Camp Countryside.
Okay.
You know, it's like Camp Krusty on The Simpsons.
Yeah,
Everything's got alliteration.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That was Camp Countryside in West Virginia. Camp Cully in 2021.
Yeah, which at the time we called Camp Casario.
We did. That's right. Like, and that works too.
Yeah, and because it was both of their first training camp with the Texans.
And yeah, we knew who would be here longer. Yeah,
right. We knew who
whose show it was.
Exactly. But both worked for the alliteration.
Yeah.
So either we could have gone with, and I think we probably went with the right one. But
yeah. But
that was a moment. David Culley being the coach of the Texans was for sure a moment in time for this team, man.
Camp Culley included a Deshaun Watson playing walk-through safety in drills. Deshaun Watson, who had led the league in passing yards the year before.
And was healthy.
And was healthy and was getting sued by 24 women, was walk through safety until finally he just walked over to the meeting and said, "Why are y'all filming me?"
Yeah.
Same bleep every day, and then they just told him to stay in the building. That was also the first camp since the inaugural season with no Andre Johnson and no J.J. Watt. One or the other was at every Texans training camp other than the first season included Andre Johnson and J.J. Watt. That was... You know, we went 20 years with one of those two icons at training camp. That was the first one with neither of them since the opener back in 2002. Just an interesting sidebar. That I think there were so many things weird about that camp.
Right.
But that contributed to it. They're like, wow, these faces are not familiar at all.
And I think because of the weirdness of it all, what we were going through in the moment, I didn't like that. That's a part of it that I hadn't even taken a moment to reflect on. But you're absolutely right. If I had a list, this would be the one at the top of the list for me.
Most memorable.
Yeah, 2020. Well, just because of how weird it was. Maybe the year before 2020.
That's on my list. I'll get to that.
Yeah, because, I mean, we couldn't sit this close to each other as we are right now.
Yeah.
And so that was weird for non-football reasons, but specific to the field, that would be the one. Deshaun Watson out here running scout team after leading the league in passing.
So number five, Camp Countryside. Number four, Camp Culley. Number three, Camp Cap.
Okay.
D'Amico Ryan's first training camp in 2023, and that's for good reasons, obviously. You're coming off of two years where you couldn't pay people to come to training camp.
Yeah.
And now you got the tickets are in demand again. People are fired up. You got a rookie quarterback. the question of will he be the starting quarterback was something that got everybody, you know, like, why aren't they just naming him the starting quarterback? So you had that storyline.
Not Willie, but when he. Why are they taking so damn long to get him there?
The little sliver of that camp that now, with the benefit of memory and hindsight, makes me a little sad is that the big revelation from that camp early on was, holy crap, this Tank Dell.
Yeah.
This Tank Dell, it makes me sad now because of the knee injury to Tank. Hopefully he's back someday. But
right.
That was, I remember that. I remember Seth and I, they practiced with the Dolphins that year,
uh-huh.
A joint practice. And that was at a point in camp where we weren't doing radio out here. We were back to doing four-hour shows. So Seth and I were up in the studio, and we had to race down here to get to practice.
Right.
And we got down here, and they had started the 11-on-11. And within the first, like, 10 snaps after we got here, Tank had, like, two or three touchdowns. That was a fun camp. D'Amico Ryan's first camp, like, to feel like the fun again was really cool.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryan's first camp and C.J. Stroud's first camp aligned. But also, you mentioned Tank Dell was wearing number 13
he
at
was.
The time. Remember, we thought we were going to have the 713 connection.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously C.J. Stroud wearing number 7. Tank Dell at the time wearing number 13.
Yep.
And it had, like, a real cool new vibe to it. Like, hey, you know what? We're out of the mud. We're out of these last two seasons, like you mentioned, Sean,
yep.
That were hell to go through, and the future looks bright.
Yeah. In that camp, there were still people around the league were still ranking the Texans in the bottom five teams in the league.
Well, they didn't know.
They didn't know.
They didn't know what they didn't know. And it also, like, they had a good season, obviously, but I don't even think it was until midway through the season. We were here for it. Right here at NRG, when they have that final-minute run, Tank Dell catches that ball against Tampa Bay.
There's three games in a row. Week 9, Tampa Bay. Week 10, Cincinnati. Week 11, Arizona.
Yeah.
Those three games in a row,
it basically,
they were 6-4 after
it
that.
It basically established the Texans' reputation as we know it today. Now they're trying to move beyond that.
Yeah.
Like, move beyond that team that we know is a nice story.
Yep.
We know they can win 10 games. Can they do more than that?
The last two, Camp COVID, you mentioned it, mm-hmm. 2020. And this is as exclusive
Camp
in terms
COVID.
Of people being able to watch it as the ones in West Virginia, because nobody was allowed to see it. They only let like 10 or 12 media members in. I was one of them, so I got to go to practice. Were you one of them too? Did you go?
Yeah, at Camp COVID.
Camp COVID.
Yeah,
you were there.
I was out there.
Okay, you were there.
Yeah,
I remember. You know, there's like, yeah. So you remember that?
Yeah.
We had to go get tested every day in the trailer. We're standing in line with players to get tested. I mean, now they got to cut in front of us.
Right.
But
we would see them getting out of their cars.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Where the testing station was. It's where they parked.
That was wild. That was also the first camp without DeAndre Hopkins.
Ah, yeah.
And I think if it were a normal camp, people would have been more agitated about it. But we were all just so happy to have football.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a chance there wasn't going to be a season at one point. And I think we were all just so happy to have football that, at least the way I'm remembering it, I'm not here to say people weren't angry, especially once the season just completely unraveled.
Right.
And you're watching Hopkins be a Pro Bowler in Arizona, that people weren't angry during the season. But I remember during camp just being happy to be out here and like, okay, good, we've got football.
Yeah, I remember being happy to be out here, but also like, and I'll just speak for myself, but I imagine a lot of us felt this way, just confused about the world.
Yeah.
Like, what exactly is going on? Where is this thing headed? Like, what even is this?
Well, and even once you got to the season, we were doing pregame. You know, they didn't let fans in, but we were doing pregame and postgame for the first home game here against Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then by the next home game, we're doing everything up at the studio. So
yeah.
We were still trying to get our arms around, like, what's safe, what's not, what's too safe, you know, like, how cautious do we need to be, all of that. That was, yeah. And again, I'm not talking in terms of this was a great training camp. We're just talking in terms of it being memorable.
Oh, yeah.
Like someday if I sit down to write the history of my radio career, covering a COVID training camp in the NFL will be one of the chapters in that book. It was, you know, there are only a few people out here, but it was an entirely unique experience. We had little GPS things on. We would get warnings from the Texans if we stood next to each other for too long out of practice.
Yeah, you guys are too close.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not like we're brushing shoulders.
Yeah.
We're too close as in the sense of like 10 feet or whatever it is.
Right.
COVID truly is one of those where, like, if you weren't there, to explain it to you would be really difficult. You would have just had to have been there.
Last one, number one most memorable training camp. I'll call it Camp Cuss Word. Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Where Bill O'Brien, that was probably the peak of Bill O'Brien's popularity here in Houston.
Yeah.
Was during Hard Knocks 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was dog cussing up a storm. He was like a rock star. I mean, he was only in season two. They went 9-7 the first season with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. Like, Bill O'Brien had not fallen out of favor with the fans at that point. Now, him buying into Brian Hoyer as the solution started to chip away at and that led to Brock Osweiler, which wasn't Bill O'Brien's choice. But if Brian Hoyer had just been better, his personal choice for a guy, they wouldn't have had to go get Brock Osweiler in the first place. That was the Hard Knocks camp was fun and overflowing with content because of the TV show. That's my favorite training camp for the Texans.
Yeah, I also remember Bill O'Brien pretending to like Rick Ross. That being a thing.
Kari Lee doing a Bill O'Brien impersonation.
I remember Brian. I feel like you correct me if I'm wrong on this. I feel like that's the same training camp because I want to say I saw it on Hard Knocks where Brian Cushion was bullying Alfred Blue.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So that part of it is one of the more memorable pieces of that training camp for me.
Those are my five. Those are my five. Hopefully this one equally memorable for all the good things.
Oh yeah, it will be.
We're on the good side of that. Texans training camp 2025. All right, Payne and Pendergast, B. Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth back tomorrow. All right, we're going to get hyped up. These are the things we're most excited about. Just flat out, no X's and O's next segment. Just things at camp, things this season, that if you're a Texan fan and you're listening, you're going to want to run through this with us. We're about to get hyped up for this training camp, and we're going to pass the baton to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris as well. We'll do all of that coming up next. We're not messing around in this last segment. We've got, you know, 7 or 8 minutes here to do our thing, and there's no reason to dive into X's and O's with anything. It is Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott with you. We're about to hand it off to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. This is just flat out, get pumped up. These are the things I'm excited about for both training camp and the upcoming season. And I'm going to give you my first one right now, and it was not in the 6 o'clock hour. This is a new one.
Let's go.
Two things. I'm excited for two things about John Harris, Texan sideline reporter. One already happened. I got my first middle finger of training camp from John Harris. So that's number one. Number two.
Welcome back, Sean.
I am amped for the first time. And play that music, Ben. Let it scream. I am pumped for the first time. John Harris is pumped about a touchdown or a big play in a game.
There's nothing
better than the Harris memes.
Yes.
The Harris memes on the sideline. Two fists, looking like he won big money on fast money on Family Feud.
Okay.
Bent knee, two fists, completely biased. I love it.
All right. So
if
we're going to go with a media member that's in close proximity to us right now, I'll flip this on you, Sean.
What?
I can't wait for your first game management, clock management crash out. Because that's coming, and I love it. Because you're always right, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm not saying that you're incorrect or that it's not justified.
Yeah.
It just reminds me and makes me think of football. It makes me know that we're here in the football season.
Yeah.
We care about this thing, possibly irrationally, but that's okay. We're not judging each other. We all care. And Sean is very much in tune to when you should be calling a timeout, when you shouldn't, when you should go for it, and when you shouldn't, and all of these types of things. I cannot wait, and we all participate.
Of course.
But Sean is one of the most animated and most passionate about getting the game management situations right, so I can't wait to be on the 8th floor of NRG Stadium in the press box, sitting a couple of seats down from Sean Pendergast and seeing that crash out.
I am not supposed to react to anything because those are the rules, but the rules go out the window when I'm seeing silly things happen on the field. I love that. I love that my overreactions in the press box made the list. That's beautiful.
And it's in the press box, and then it transfers to the post-game show.
It does. That's true.
So I can't wait to flip on the Odyssey app,
man.
And I'm usually still in the press box when you guys start.
I appreciate it.
So
that,
I get to see it live and in person with you sitting a couple of seats down from
me.
Then I cut on the app, and I get to hear you
live. You're the man, B. Scott.
I appreciate that.
Let's at least squeeze some football ones in here.
Let's do it.
Nico Collins doing it. Nico Collins pulling out the entire menu of punishment and harm on the opposition, whether it's mossing them on 50-50 balls, whether it's trucking them on that lethal slant route that he runs with a head of steam, whether it's a bubble screen that he takes to the house because Laramie Tunsil's not around anymore to be illegally downfield, or whether it's him not even having the ball in his hands, it's trucking some dude to open up a lane for Joe Mixon or Nick Chubb on the outside and then getting up and screaming, "Weight room!
Weight room.
Weight room.
That's weight room,
I'm pumped
boy.
Up for that, man. I'm pumped up for Nico Collins, a fully healthy Nico Collins trucking fools this year. Give me all of it, man.
How about his counterpart on the other side, his counterparts on the other side? The Texans defensive secondary and specifically the chip on the shoulder defensive secondary, these guys are out there with something to prove. Kamari Lassiter feels slighted. Yeah. Kalen Bullock feels slighted. Yeah. Derek Stingley is like some kind of quiet assassin. Y'all remember last training camp, right, when he laid Dalton Schultz out here on his ass after the scrum was already over with? And we were like, what got into Derek Stingley? We didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah.
These guys got a chip on their shoulder. And, oh, by the way, I ain't forget, they added another dude, that's a little squirrely and that definitely has a chip on his shoulder. C.J. Gardner-Johnson
He's
out there talking
chip.
About how the Super Bowl champions I just played for didn't know how to program a dog or didn't want me out there because I was too much of a dog. And now that guy is here, here for this training camp. The Texans secondary with the chip on his shoulder, I cannot wait to watch them work.
That is a whole pound of dogs right there. That is all dogs.
And I ain't mentioned Jalen Petrie. He's going to come up at some point.
That is all dogs,
yes,
man.
Yes, sir.
I am going to go back to the offensive side of the football. I'm pumped for year three of C.J. Stroud. I am pumped for C.J. Stroud. That the organization acted with the level of urgency that they did to the season that he had last year.
Yes.
Which I think a lot of the regression statistically was not CJ's fault. I'll go to the grave saying that about his second year. That to watch him in season three, to get to operate with what we're hoping is a much more competent caller of plays, designer of plays, blocking schemes, better coached offensive line.
Yes.
They went and they ended last season with Nico Collins as really their only dangerous weapon in the passing game. So they went and got Christian Kirk. They went and drafted a couple of guys who have been largely applauded, I think, for where they got them in the draft and the players they are. And I'll add Jaden Higgins to the things I'm getting amped up about after watching him in minicamp. The urgency that they acted with on the offense I absolutely love. And I'm super excited to see how this plays out specifically for C.J. Stroud. Hand in his face. Slinging dimes. That's C.J. Stroud, man.
I mentioned chip on the shoulder, something to prove.
Yeah.
Like, I think C.J. Stroud is proven enough, and we all understand C.J. Stroud to be an elite quarterback. I think we all still feel that way. Nothing happened last year that takes us down from that.
Yeah.
But if he's got a chip on his shoulder, you could definitely see why.
Yes.
And have something to prove. You could definitely see why. Man, how about Jalen Petrie? And look, this is not a shot. This is me genuinely loving Jalen Petrie Stafford's own. Jalen Petrie making up for getting burned on a pass play with either a batted ball at the line of scrimmage or a tackle for loss, and then Kamari Lassiter coming up to him already slapping his own helmet. But then slapping Jalen Petrie's helmet because he just made a game-changing play after, by the way, probably giving up a pass play that's also going to have us mad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, coming up when you really need him.
Oh, yeah.
A tackle for loss behind the line of scrimmage, doing the Jalen Petrie things. And Jalen Petrie, by the way, was hurt by the end of the season.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see that.
Can't wait to see it. I can name 50 more names, but it all gets started out here today. Brandon Scott. B. Scott, I appreciate you these three days,
man, it
brother.
Was fun.
Thank you. Yeah, we had
pleasure.
A good time. We had a good time. All right, about to hand it off to Texans Radio here at 8 a.m. In the Loop. We'll be out here 10 to 2. Before we get out today, man, I'm fired up for camp, dude.
Let's
I'm fired up.